Welcome to this week's Center's Kingdom Culture Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Merle Skinner. And this week, as you know, we're going to be talking about issues that relate to culture and family, education, the kind of things that we're facing all across our country and literally around the world. So I am so excited today as the executive director of the Christian Family and Children's Center to have a really, really smart, intelligent, great host, our great guest today, Phil Playa. Phil has been a friend for a long time and a colleague, and Phil is one of the leaders, really, truly, in talking about funding, Christian education, tax credits, school choice. He's just done a lot of things, but even more so, he has been a great leader in the movement. So welcome, Phil. Glad to have you here today.
Thanks, Merle. Great to join you.
Okay. Phil, tell our audience a little bit about yourself. A couple things just that come to my mind is Phil is one of the leaders as a Christian school head to actually bring a consolidation of a couple large Christian schools together. And I believe at one point had ran the largest Christian school in Pennsylvania. So Phil has done a lot in his career. But tell us a little bit about yourself and what you're doing now, Phil.
Well, thanks, Merle. I've been in Christian education for nearly 30 years. Hard to believe that. And my longest stretch was 19 years at two schools in central Pennsylvania. Started as a high school principal, and then was the head of school. And then the Lord gave us an opportunity to acquire another school. And so walked through what's legally called a asset purchase agreement with a corresponding rental agreement, and basically merged two fairly successful schools into one, what we were calling a Christian school district. And so I did that for several years after that merger. And then I just felt like the Lord was calling me to step away, that there was something else I ought to be working on. And so I currently work independently, helping a number of different Christian schools all around the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania and even outside of Pennsylvania. And I come alongside head of schools and boards, doing everything from development, tax credit programs, capital campaign work, to strategic planning, to even some educational programming things, as well as coaching heads of school, as well as development directors. So it's fun to be in the Christian school movement. You see a lot of good things happening across the state, and I get to be a part of it.
That's pretty exciting, Phil. In fact, what I would tell our guests, by the way, say, hey, Christian education, that's kind of an interesting thing, but I'm not really interested. I'm going to encourage you to listen today and hear, because we're going to be talking about a lot of cultural issues. And many of us know, and Phil, I know you're experiencing that, is that education's in a huge crisis in our country today. And that's true in Christian education as well, too. Everybody likes to think, oh, public education's in a mess and Christian schools are just low. We are all in critical issues. And but this is a cool opportunity. Phil and I have been around the block a while. We have some gray hair in our heads and we've done this for a while. This is an opportunity for God to use Christian education to change our country, change our areas, change our families. But there's real crisis involved in all of that too. So Phil, I know you have some thoughts about that.
Yeah, and if I can even extend it beyond that, Merle, you know, I tell folks what wakes me up in the morning comes out of Psalm 78. And the psalmist writes this, teach the praiseworthy deeds of the Lord. And then it actually says for five generations, the ancestors, the parents, the children, the unborn children. And then the Bible actually talks about the unborn of the unborn. And it bookends it with this phrase, that they may place their trust in God. So I have often told kindergarten teachers and kindergarten teachers in particular that squirrely little kindergarten boy who can't stand still, if the Lord were to tarry, if he were to delay in coming back, that child is someone's great grandparent. And we get to have that impact in Christian education. The president of Family Life Today was Dennis Rainey. And he used to say, our children are messengers to a time and place we don't see. So not only, Merle, do I think Christian education can have a heavy impact on our culture in the here and now, I think it can have a great impact on our culture and our world two generations, three generations, dare we say five generations from now.
And I agree with you. In fact, for those of you who have followed this podcast, you know, we've talked about what would happen if another Jesus revolution happens. And one of the things everybody around the culture today is talking about, well, is revival happening? And what about these millennials? And what about these Zers? And it's true. It's much like in the 60s. God did some amazing things in people's life, but you have to have a place to put that movement. And so one of the interesting things I think, and I know, Phil, you do as well, too, is that Christian education has an opportunity to be a place where families can come and can be supported and can work their way through. So I'm with you, Phil. In fact, I'm kind of actually hoping to see some of that. We'll see how God does that. So, and Phil and I work much broader than in the areas that we serve. Phil, what are your thoughts as you think about this crisis in education and Christian education and how we deal with it? What are some of the things that you think families and schools and communities, actually churches, are facing?
Yeah. Merle, even before we talk about crisis, I think there's a really neat opportunity that's happening. I think as a result of COVID, as a result of folks taking a look at other forms of education, they stopped and they looked at their kids' needs. They looked at Christian schools anew, if you will, and they liked what they saw. They said, these aren't poor academic institutions. These aren't places where kids don't get along. These are really amazing places where my kid can get a great education, where they're known, where they have relationships with teachers, where I feel like I can be a part as a parent. And we've seen a spike, if you will, a gradual increase in folks picking Christian education. Now that comes with challenges. And we Absolutely. Probably could address some of those. So while we look at admissions as a wonderful thing, it also comes with its challenges. One challenge I think off the top of my head is it doesn't cure all the financial issues that relate to Christian schools. Right. At least in Pennsylvania, where I'm at, the average discount rate on tuition based on financial need or tuition remission for staff is about 30%. So if you have more students coming and that discount rate even just stays the same, that net dollar amount that you're discounting just grows, and you've got to fill that with something. So it adds more pressure to fundraising and non-tuition sources of revenue. So increased enrollment is wonderful. But if you're not taking care of the fundamental basics of the finances of Christian schools, ensuring that folks are paying for what it costs, or that those discounts are being paid for through real dollars, schools will get themselves in trouble. And so there's still financial threats out there, even while enrollment grows. The second thing related to it. Go ahead, Merle.
Phil, before you go on the second thing, let me just echo that in multiple ways, because, and I think that the I don't want to use the word poverty, but the lower income area that you serve, that just gets magnified tremendously. So speaking to our broader audience, not just parents, not just churches, but not just schools, but to people, do we want to see these kinds of things happen? We've got to participate, both in public policy, as you hear these conversations about school choice and funding, and also in terms of giving. And in our case, again, in Pennsylvania, there's a tax credit that people can participate in. We'll talk more about that, but it requires people to kind of step into a vision for seeing this happen in a bigger way. So I'm with you, Phil. I think a lot of people say, boy, you're growing like crazy, so this will be really great. But it's actually, there's an inverse curve to all that. So.
Well, and my prayer would be that Christendom would see Christian schools as their schools. If you look at Jesus's 12 disciples, the majority of them grew up in a particular part of just north of the Sea of Galilee. And it's understood that as children, young people, that they would have gone to a Jewish synagogue school. They would not have gone to the Roman school. And so why was that? Because in the Jewish culture, it was not only important that they they study and potentially be a rabbi. And if they didn't meet the standard of rabbi, they'd go back and work with whatever trade their father was doing. But not only was that important to them, but what was important was that the Jewish culture and the Jewish belief was passed from one generation to the next. I don't know that anyone can turn the news on and go that we've done a tremendously good job at passing Christian belief, Christian culture, Christian ethics along to the next generation. It hasn't gotten better. I think what we need to do is consider Christian schools our means to do that and the means to turning the tide.
Agreed, Phil. And let's even go back even like in more relevant history in America. What happened was the public school movement actually came out of this desire that we have a Christian nation. And so the values were incorporated in this public education idea. And we're still holding on to that. We're still holding on to that in the church. And realizing that the public school has to reflect the culture that we're in. So again, go back to the Roman schools. I mean, so all of those challenges don't become good and bad. They just become conversations about enculturation. I think too, we also, people say, well, why in the world does Christian education not flourish? Why aren't inner city schools? Why are they not flourishing there? And oftentimes a public school is the biggest employer in the, and so the church and everybody else is connected very dearly to the public, so which they should be in terms of a mission field, but not necessarily as a acculturation thing. So there's some real challenges here that we have to rework in our culture and be intentional about that are going to be difficult without a doubt. So.
Well, and Merle, we can't get away from that education is costly. Right. I believe wholeheartedly if Christian education was free, it would get flocked with individuals because they would just, they value what we do. They just simply have a hard time affording it and access and getting access to it. We both have a dear friend, Dr. Alan Pugh, who says this: when he and his wife went to college, they paid $16,000 for a total of 8 years of schooling. When his daughter went to college, she paid $16,000 for 1 year of schooling. And when his granddaughter went to the same college, she paid $36,000 for 1 year of schooling. That is massive inflation. We've been sensitive to inflation the last year or two. Educational inflation has been even higher over the last 2 or 3 or 4 decades. And it's absolutely impacting people's ability to access quality Christian education.
Absolutely, and I think some of our earlier years, Christian education, like Catholic education and other places, subsidized that on the backs of people and employees. And that's just quite frankly, isn't fair. You know, it's not fair. It's one thing to ask someone to come to ministry and sacrifice appropriately. But it's not a fair thing to say, let's have you live a poverty life or only be able to work a year or two until you can go out and make real money. So that change as well is happening. So Phil, I know that's something that you're working on a lot.
Yeah, and that just brings us to another challenge, Merle, and that is it is really challenging to attract and to retain quality Christian educators. Some of it is because that historical position that we won't, I always say this about Christian schools, we don't charge what it costs and we don't collect what we charge. That results in paying our most key people a lower rate of pay. And that just has made the challenge of finding quality teachers the last couple of years really, really difficult. Now, I would tell you retention is an important thing, and that's not just financial. That's incorporating them into decision-making, valuing them not only as employees, but as people. Are you checking in with them? Is the principal stopping into the classroom to check up on them and just see how they are? There's so, retention is more than just a financial thing.
Absolutely. Well, and in today's culture, let's face it, everybody's facing that, right? But education generally, there's no people in teachers' college because of what's going on in the culture. People don't want to teach. So let me just even step out of this conversation just for one second to say, we need to be praying for Christian educators to be called into this education and to have a vision and a passion. And again, I think this education crisis is a great opportunity for God to do that. And Christian schools are a great place for that to happen, but you're absolutely right. So keep going.
Yeah, I'm sorry to interrupt. Let me add to your prayer. So in the book of Ezekiel, it's a pretty sad verse, but it can be a motivational verse for us. It says, I looked for someone who would stand in the gap, and I found none. What a sad testimony of Israel as its walls were broken down. They looked for people who would literally stand in the gap to protect the city, and they found none. I have to tell you, what Christian educators are doing on a daily basis, they're standing in the gap for our kids. Our kids are coming with academic needs, social emotional needs. They look at their social media and how everyone's so happy, and they realize my life isn't always so happy, and it just drives them into devaluing themselves, muddying the waters on who they are, what God says about them. But then here's the Christian school teacher every day, right there with kids in their good, their bad, and their ugly moments. I've often said kids will spend 16,000 hours in school from kindergarten through 12th grade. How powerful is that? If those 16,000 hours are alongside a mature, faithful, quality Christian teacher, that it can only be impactful.
Absolutely true. And to even take that a step further, Phil, in today's culture, people say, well, that's great. We're going to homeschool. We're going to do pods and things like that. And again, this is not to dismiss the value of those things, but the thing that teacher is doing is also teaching community. And we're teaching what it means to be in community outside of family and including family. And so the school, one of my concerns is, again, schooling has become optional now for everybody, you know. Yeah. I'm not talking about just Christian schools or the school movement, but even higher education. Like, and we forget that it was the church who invented liberal arts because they wanted people to be educated and understand culture. And so one of the things I'm really concerned about in the current culture is that we've just devalued education. That is not to say that people that are doing the trades, I mean, I'm all for that. I'm so excited about our graduates that are running garages and that are doing all kinds. They're making a lot more money than I'm making. I mean, it's not to dismiss the skill of the trades, but we don't want to be also dismissing intellectual and creative thinking and people, because we need both of those things really well. So, but anyway, community. Well,
and I appreciate community, your point there, Merle. My wife and I are both educators. We could have very easily homeschooled our four children. There was enough, even back then, before all this online stuff, to do a quality job. Sure. Ronald Reagan used to say, trust but verify. Mm-hmm. I think our children walk through a process where at some point they trust what mom and dad are saying, but they're going to look to verify it. Where are they going to verify it? Yes, in church with a youth pastor, when they see them for maybe an hour and a half a week. But where it's really going to happen is the community that you're referencing, Merle, the Christian school community with Christian school teachers, other parents, other Christian school kids. That's where what parents are teaching. And that's why we often talk about partnership with parents, right? We're coming alongside. Because that verification process occurs in the life of a kid that helps them walk the bridge between this is my parents' faith and this is now my own faith.
Yeah, it's huge. It is really huge. And I think even the flip side of that is really cool, which is, Perry says, well, you know, Christian schools aren't perfect. Well, absolutely. because we get to work out our sinful relationships in community as well, too. And again, in my mind, and we have three daughters who went through Christian school or grown, and we would not change that for the world. And what's really interesting is the things that were important to them weren't always the things that were important to us. Like the things that they come out and say, well, this is such a great experience. I'm like, oh, that's kind of interesting. I thought that was okay. But that was really powerful for them. So community has huge value. Let's transition, Phil, because I think, again, you touched on it. Finances are huge, right? Mm-hmm. And how we fund Christian education. Now we sit at a time, you and I have done this for a long time, but we're just so amazed. I can't remember how many states we are at this point in time that are just, I mean, there is money for school. Now, we could argue that there's not enough for Christian schools and all those kind of things, but what do you see as the critical issues around those pieces, the financial pieces, Phil?
Yeah, I think we do live in a time that we're almost, there's a mixture here, right? There's the thought of we want to support, at least from the government standpoint, we want to support Christian education or private education. And so you see things like tax credit programs and educational savings accounts, and you see funding for textbooks and transportation and safety and things like that. And then there's this other side, oh, but we want you to act just like we act. And so we're a little split personality in that. But for me, I think it's really critical that Christian schools charge what it costs. I think those who the Lord has blessed and are able to pay should pay for that. I also think that the Bible says we should help those in need, and so they should have a third-party financial aid process that helps them walk through it. But we shouldn't just discount it. We should actually be able to fund those discounts with alternate sources of revenue, whether that's tax credit programs or health state or educational savings account, or whether it's donors or targeted fundraisers. We've got to fund the discounts, or we simply are going to, again, if the average discount rate is 30%, we'll operate our school on 70% of revenue. That's not going to be quality. And you're certainly not going to hire people on 70% of wages. Parents aren't going to be excited if the program's 70% of value. So we've got to take advantage of as many programs and opportunities we can to fund those discounts so that we're operating with as much revenue as possible, because quality education is costly. There's no way of getting around that.
Let's push on that a little bit, Phil. Let's flesh it out just a little bit. And I know we're talking to people in multiple levels around the country and stuff. So, I mean, we can't come out and say, well, the cost is this much to do it. But family's first question almost always, I hate to say it, is how much does it cost? Yeah. And it's a valid question, right?
Yeah.
One of the things that we encourage families to do is to let's look at the purpose of this and then talk about cost. Let's make sure this is what you really want. Let's not necessarily go to what car we want to, or how much does a car, all these cars cost, but what do we really want in a car? What do we want in an education for our kids? But the truth is it really does cost. And so oftentimes I find people shopping for the lowest price. And one of the things we talk about a lot in the Christian school community is just what you said. You cannot subsidize this to the point that you get people in the doors, but you can't do the job. And so churches were really, really, and still struggle with this sometimes with small Christian schools. They try to fund it in ways that aren't helpful. But the practicality is this is a lot of money for families if we do it right. We're talking about easily five figures in a healthy environment, I think. I don't know if you'd agree with that, Phil, but in my mind, if a school's really going to pay teachers what they're for, if they're going to have facilities that they need, you know, we're going to be talking $10,000 or more easily. I know schools are less than that, and I'm not suggesting it shouldn't be. Yeah. But when you start adding, okay, so I've got one child, maybe I can do that, right? I've got five kids. So now all of a sudden we're talking 50,000 plus, you know, out of my, who can afford that? Now, we've used the numbers around the country. I don't know if you would agree with this, but that families should be able to afford about 10% of their income to pay for tuition.
I agree with that, yeah.
So you're talking about a family of five at an average Christian school that's charging $10,000. They've got to be making $500,000 a year to be able to afford it, right? Yeah. So how many of our families are going to do that, right? I mean, so that's the real dilemma for families. Yep. And we serve an area, hardworking area, but it's reflective of our part of the community in a rural area that don't make those kind of dollars. They're hardworking. They're great folks. So if you want to have schools in areas that are affluent, you may be able to do this well. But if we really believe what we talked about, Phil, that this should be something happening across the country, we've got to find ways to do that. So what are the keys to that from your perspective?
Well, it comes back to that word community, Merle. The community has to believe that there is value in biblical education of our children. Yeah. In addition to, that's just mom and dad's job.
Yeah.
Right. I was talking to an Amish man the other day, and he was talking about a house that burned down up in their area. And he said the community came together and mm-hmm. they rebuilt that house at no cost to the family.
Wow.
And his basic, what he was telling me is just, the community has this pool of resources that they just see it absent, you know, not only as individual families, but as mm-hmm. this is our community. And we've got to view education that way. Education is too important to not view in a broader sense and have broader involvement.
Agreed. And that's a challenge to our conceptual thing. We go back to those original, we've got a good public school, right? We've got, we're doing well, or I can homeschool. So this creates a really cultural challenge for us in the Christian community that we have to be able to talk about. In the past, it's been hard to talk about this. I was meeting with a pastor the other day who said that we talked about, we've been in one place for a long time, but the relationship with the church has changed. And we talked about one of the reasons it has is because originally the question was, we believe in public school, we don't believe in private school, so therefore we can't have much of a relationship. And we've transcended that, but that is still going on in a lot of places, right? Let's face it.
Can I push back just a little, Merle, on good public schools? I wanna just push back on good. And this is not a critique of public schools, because what I'm gonna say, they're incapable of doing. God does not expect us to separate the sacred from the secular. It's all His, right? One of the things Christian schools talk about is having a biblical worldview, where you view everything in light of the gospel, in light of what Scripture says. Our public schools, and rightfully so, by the way, are unable to do that.
Yeah.
They're just unable to do that.
And it's counter to their mission.
It is counter to their mission. It would be inappropriate for those who don't want that, right? Mm-hmm. That's where Christian schools... That's where I go, yeah, public schools, good. Mm-hmm. I would always say, okay. Mm-hmm. Because my grandfather used to write me letters when I went to college, right? So back in the day, there's no email. Even if there was email, he probably wouldn't have used it. And he'd write me a letter probably once a month. And at the bottom would write, "What profits a man if he gains the whole world and loses his soul?" I think what Christian schools are doing is saying, hey, we want you to view the world in light of God's redemptive story and in light of God's word, and it's going to help you not lose your soul. You know, yes. You're not just going to get an education, but you're going to learn to live in God's world for God's purposes, and you'll be awfully better for it if you do.
Yeah. All right. Which goes back to another point. One of the reasons that Christian schools aren't stronger is because the church and strong Christian families have not invested, I'm not talking about financially, but invested themselves in that community. And think about what happens when a community that wants to do this comes together and says, we want to make sure that our sports programs are distinct, our quality and distinct, and our arts and those kind of things. So again, this is an opportunity. It's an opportunity that we've never had in our country before, because I don't think Christian education has ever been as strong as it has been now, so, or as mature.
So here's some specific ways community can get involved, right? And let's talk about a couple non-financial. A grandparent coming in to help the English teacher grade her vocabulary assignments. Mm-hmm. That just reduces the amount of time that teacher needs to do and can put more time to creative planning. When a parent says, hey, I'll drive 5 kids to that field trip, all right, mm-hmm. it just, you know, assuming everything else is in place, it just helps them in the area of transportation. Here's some financial things. When everyone participates in the fundraiser that they do, so maybe there's a spring fundraiser and a fall fundraiser, everyone participates at some level, either through involvement or financial giving. Many schools have an annual fund. I said this earlier, schools are notorious for not charging what it costs and not collecting what they charge. Well, so that this annual fund actually helps them, I say about annual funds, it helps them operate at a higher level than tuition alone affords them. Let me say it again, it helps them operate at a higher level than tuition alone affords them. So folks will give above and beyond tuition, or folks not connected to the school will give, knowing that the more I can give to the annual fund, the less pressure I put on tuition. The less pressure I put on tuition, the less pressure I put on financial assistance that discounts and then creates issues with the quality of education. And then the last one is, at least in Pennsylvania, but in many states, they're utilizing government-run programs that help folks redirect money or use state dollars to provide increased access to Christian education. So there are both non-financial and financial ways that the community can help Christian schools.
Absolutely. So let's kind of wrap this all together in a bow in one last more difficult topic, which is how do we get the community involved in things like public policy and engaging in this, which is again, quite honestly, a difficult process. But let's go back to our couple of our highlights. Let's just say that, yeah, we can run a school on tuition in a wealthy community or with wealthy donors, right? We can do that. But how much of the country can have a Christian school if we do it that way, right? And my argument when people say, oh, we should just take care of this ourselves, I don't think we can. I think if we're gonna offer a Christian education to the broad masses, we have to really be a part of public funding. And we have to fight for those things. And I know, Phil, you're a part of that, and we do that well. But let's talk about that just for a second, because I think it's easy for people to say, oh, I don't want to take public money. We don't want to do it, because it does come with some strings. My argument, and I'll just say it out there, is that we have to be a part of that if we're going to serve the broader culture. And secondly, we have to fight to keep the core values of any money that comes with maintaining religious liberty and those kinds of things. And so, Phil, you do this a good bit. Let's talk about let's talk about how we challenge ourselves in community to get involved. Any thoughts off the top of your head?
I do. So I was trying to think of the quote from Thomas Jefferson, and Merle, you can help me with it. He says, we really don't have a democracy of the majority. We have a democracy of those who get involved, right? So participate. Yeah. I'll paraphrase Jefferson. He was much smarter than I. I think that makes our community in particular, the Christian community, a little uncomfortable because we want to be gospel-centric and we feel as if that's some distraction to it. I don't see it as a distraction. I see it as an extension of gospel ministry. Because if it's true, if we're teaching our kids that God has a view of the world, he has a view of what government should look like. He has a view of what the home should look like, what society should look like, what business should look like. And so how will they know if those who do know the scriptures and do know how to integrate faith into those things, how will they know if we don't tell them? And for some, they think telling them means I need to be part of some huge campaign and so forth. It's not. I mean, there's one, I think it was Tip O'Neill, who was the Speaker of the House back in the 80s. He said, all government is local. Your local representative is the guy who owns the business down the street from you. Just meet him. Schedule an appointment. Make a phone call. Share your life with him. Hey, this is how we educate our kids. How can the government help with that? You do not have, as a citizen, you do not have to have all the answers. Just ask the question. Ask the question. So I really, and listen, I'm a realist. It won't be everyone, but it needs to be more than it is now.
Absolutely. Well, and my experience has been, Phil, and I think we've talked about this a lot, but there are a lot of great representatives, senators, and people in administration, staffers, who really do want to hear our stories. They do really, and they often will take a step in the right direction. I've shared this a lot, but I am always embarrassed when a legislator says to me, hey, Merle, we went to bat for this thing. I took some political hit for this, and I didn't get one thank you from your community. Nobody stopped to tell me you did the right thing and thanks for stepping up. And so I just want to encourage us that, again, salt and light is salt and light. I mean, and that can be encouraging representatives who or legislators who are really interested and on the same page. Sometimes they need encouragement, particularly depending on which side of the aisle they're on sometimes. Although this is polling, it's really interesting. This thing is polling at 70% around the country, school choice. Yeah. This is our time. I mean, in my mind, Phil, I don't know about you, but this is our time to make a cultural change, and we need people to get involved. So I would encourage you, pay attention to what's going on, and it shouldn't be just parents of Christian school people. It should be Christian leaders who are thinking about, do we want Christian education to be available? Find out more. There's lots of interesting stuff out there. There's lots of people can do that. So, Phil, as we wrap this part of this up, do you have any closing thoughts or things that you want to make sure that our audience hears?
Christian education, our time is now. And, you know, it's going to take a community to raise a generation of Christian school leaders that make a difference in their world. And in their world, I mean their homes, their churches, their towns, their states, and if the Lord so chooses, literally the world.
Yeah, agreed. That's a great closing comment, Phil. Let me pray if we could. So, and then we'll talk a little bit more about how people can get in contact with you. But so God, for that is our prayer for this. Phil and I joined together today that people would understand and be able to look beyond the surface of Christian education, look beyond the surface values of money and dollars, and Father, begin to see the heart of the people that are in this movement. Father, they would be willing to put their shoulder to the wheel of that happening. Father, and whether that means giving or participating in a tax program or Father, talking to the legislators, or whether it just means going down and helping run the concession stand for an athletic event, that Father, that they would begin to see that this is something that can change our cultures, our communities, our world, and our families. Father, I pray that you'd bless Phil as he continues to work in this area, in this movement, and has significant influence among leaders, that God, that you would just bless him richly. Father, you would give him insight and discernment, and Father, help him as he manages and looks at things that are hard sometimes to look at, that you would give him favor. In the name of Jesus, we pray. Amen. So, Phil, if somebody wants to say, hey, I like this Phil guy. He's pretty smart. I want to have him come talk to my banquet, or I want him to do whatever. How do they get hold of you?
Sure. Would love to come alongside folks. I learned in this process of being a sitting head of school to an independent person that I love to help. So they can reach me by email at philgpaleo@gmail.com. Let me spell that for them. Phil, P-H-I-L-G, Paleo, P-U-L-E-O, @gmail.com. Love to have a conversation with folks.
And feel free, guys, as well. You can find out more about the center. And if you want to email us, if you've forgotten that or lost that or can't get that on the recording, email us at info@champion.org, and we'll be glad to pass that contact information along to you. I want to remind you, you can find out more about the center at www.champion.org. You can actually listen to this and other podcasts on our podcast website at www.champion.org/podcast. So I would encourage you to take a look at those as we talk about the kingdom, the culture, everything that's going on in our culture and world today. So once again, I'm your host, Dr. Merle Skinner, and I look forward to hearing from you about what you think about this podcast.